This is 91.9 FM Port Townsend Community Radio. You're listening to Treasures and Pleasures, and this is Marcia Pearlstein, your friendly neighborhood interviewer, interviewing this morning Nancy Alvarez. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Great to have you. Nancy has many, many, many hats. She's a novelist, a screenwriter, a videographer. She's done, in the past, episodes, TV episodes. She's written for The Waltons, Moving On, as well as several TV movies. She's taught screenwriting at UCLA and in Seattle. So she's done many, many things, but she is now ours here in Port Townsend. We'll find out when and why she's with us. But we also need to tell you that in 2008, she wrote Little Nancy, The Journey Home, and it is a memoir that has incredible use for women who are going through difficult journeys, and or we all have difficult moments in our journeys. And Nancy talks about that and talks about how to use the pain to move through it and move into a more joyous way of being. She also offers workshops connected to this book, doing the same. And she has worked in Clallam and Jefferson County giving kids a voice through video. So Nancy's all about voice and change. Tell us a little bit, what brought you to Port Townsend?
I didn't expect that question, but it's a good question. I was living in L.A. with my second husband, who was an actor, and he was getting less and less work. We were in our early 50s, and I was looking for a place that was less expensive, that I could sell a house in L.A. where the prices were still pretty high, and we could use the difference, invest the difference. And my friend down the street, oddly enough, her brother-in-law is John Considine, who lives here, and she told me about Port Townsend, and John and Astrid invited us to visit, and we did and stayed with them, and I think I had met him maybe once in all the years I'd known his sister-in-law, and I fell in love with it.
Who doesn't? Who
doesn't? It's a great town to live in.
So mostly since you've arrived here, you've been writing.
Yes.
And teaching a little bit about writing and running the workshops. So tell us, what spurs in you the urge to express yourself through that medium?
Well, it's interesting. When I was a kid, I was a dancer, and that's how I expressed myself. But even in my dance classes, I told stories. I would choreograph dances from a very early age. So it's not surprising that I turned to writing, and the creative impulse in me is probably the strongest part of my personhood. It just feels essential to me, and I can't even tell you why.
So what are you working on currently?
I'm writing a multi-generational novel using my grandparents as characters in it, and in an odd way, it's helped me accept my grandmother, who was a fairly difficult woman. I remember she sang with Caruso and did not want to be a mom, so she was not the best of mothers, which gave my mom a hard time, and it translated it down as those things do. But I ran into her on a march to Washington in the 60s against the Vietnam War, and I said, she was in her 90s at that point. I said, Nanny, what are you doing here? And she said, the same thing you are. And she kept walking in the other direction. So that was it. That was seeing my grandmother.
Writing a novel for you, does it require a lot of imagining or a lot of seeing what is really there and then changing it around, or kind of how do you work with these things?
Both. I know when I was going to write about my grandparents, their parents brought them here from Europe. And I knew more about my grandmother's life because she started singing at a very early age. She was pushed by her parents, I guess. She had a gorgeous voice. But my other side, my father's side, came from a shtetl. For those of you who aren't Jewish and don't know, shtetls are the little villages that Jews lived in all over Europe. And I didn't know anything about shtetl life, so I got a book. I did research, and I got a book which was fascinating to me because I found out where I got some of my need to help people, my social conscience. All of that was part of shtetl life, so it was very interesting to me.
Actually, it's interesting because you could really say Port Townsend is a large shtetl because we have a lot of community feeling.
Yes.
Lots of ways people really our extended family with each other because we're all from somewhere else.
Yeah, that's true too, and it's why one of the things I love about Port Townsend. So that's funny, but it is my history.
Uh-huh. How else do you spend your time besides writing and offering these wonderful workshops?
Oh, goody. I can give a plug to the Madrona Mind Body Institute. I take a lot of NEO with Allison. I absolutely love her classes. I walk, hike a lot, spend time with my partner, who moved here to be with me, going to arts events. I mean, I go to blues festival, jazz festival, film festival, and I worked. I was very involved in the peace movement.
So you, to go back to the film festival, which was the last thing on your list here, your video of Kids at Risk, did that have something to do with the film festival at some point?
Yeah, that was Peter Simpson, who I will always love. He was very helpful to me. He really believed in what I was doing with kids, and they would get to come to the film festival. They were part of the film festival. These were kids, risk kids, who often came out of juvenile justice system or jail or whatever, and they would present their piece and talk about why they had created such a piece. We didn't write it for them or choose topic. The kids did. And it was unbelievable to watch them stand up in front of an audience and talk about the piece in their lives. Very empowering for them.
And you know that we also have a film institute now from the film festival.
I didn't until I was at the film festival this year.
Oh, well, so you're going to have to try to hook up with the new regime, because I think the stuff you're doing with kids, with Jeanette Force, executive director,
yes,
of the Film Institute, is doing a lot of work with kids.
Yeah, I noticed that. As a matter of fact, there was a guy who did a film. He works with Native kids in Seattle, and I went up to him after he spoke and offered my services, because I would love to go into Seattle and work with those kids and not have to raise the money to do so.
The other thing that I noticed, the larger theme, because jumping off from kids to women, is that I get the theme that sort of seems to run through all of the work you've done for years and years and years, is giving various people voice. So tell us about giving women voice.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I finished the memoir, I really was not comfortable with other people reading it, because I wrote it for myself to begin with, because I had lost Joy. And I was really uncomfortable with other people reading the intimate details of my life, because I didn't hold back. And I wrote about everything because I wanted to understand. I wanted to see my own patterns. But I've been told by women who have taken the workshop or have read the book that it's my honesty that enabled them to be honest also.
I think you model the behavior that you want. I think modeling is a very, very important thing. For the listeners, at the end of the book, there's a series of questions drawn from each chapter, kind of a workbook, which allows you to plug yourself in and look at your own situation. And the thing that most intrigued me about these questions in this workbook, because I'm a therapist and I've worked with workbooks with clients forever and ever, was your sense that things don't happen chronologically. I mean, they occur chronologically, but what you do with them and how you think about them happen in a different way. So could you describe that a little bit?
Well, when I first wrote the book, what's interesting is I didn't write it chronologically. I wrote it by topic, you know, early childhood, high school years, leaving home, marriage, divorce, because that's really how I think about things. And an agent in New York, who was actually Scott Turow's agent, suggested that I redo it and write it chronologically. It would be easier to follow. So I reworked the whole book, which took months and months and months, and did it chronologically, which I think probably was a good choice. But I do tend to think about life in terms of events, topics, etc. But I think doing it chronologically taught me more, even more about myself, because I could see the evolution of the way I made choices and decisions, and it helped me rethink how I do that.
You know, for so many of us, a lot of things are about giving ourselves permission to do things any way that makes sense for us. And so, although it does make a lot of sense and it turned out really well to do it chronologically, for women to give themselves permission to look at themes in their own lives or to look at things spatially or various different ways. For example, many women I work with, passivity is a big theme. And so if they see how passivity runs through the different stages of their lives and ways in which they've been less passive, things that they've needed to do to learn to speak up for themselves, that kind of thing.
So, well, it's funny because passivity is not a theme in my life, but what is hiding. It was so dangerous to speak out and say who I was and what I really believed periodically at different points in my life that I would get shut down or shut out. So being open and being honest has been very difficult for me, and I can't be any other way. So I became silent for various periods of my life, and I think little Nancy, the kid that I was trying to find writing this book, would kind of go underground and spur me on, give me a little zets, as they would say in Jewish, a little push to, you know, come on out, you don't have to be afraid. And I thank God for her because I have been afraid and I have shut up at various times in my life. And those were never the happiest times for me. They seem dangerous. If I look back on it, those were dangerous times when I could have just given up.
Well, you seem to have a good connection to little Nancy. And speak a little bit more about how writing this book helped you help little Nancy grow up.
Well, when I started, I had had a bladder infection that lasted 5 months. And any women out there, if you've had a bladder infection, just imagine feeling that way for 5 months. I mean, I got pretty depressed. And I was walking upstairs to move from my couch to my bed because all I could do was lie down. And I saw a childhood picture of myself that's on the cover of the book. And I thought as I passed it, gee, I wish I could get her back, which stopped me in my tracks. And I began to write a letter to her because I really didn't feel any joy. I felt shut down. I felt scared. I really didn't think the infection was ever going to leave, despite what the doctors told me. And writing that initial letter just felt wonderful to talk to myself as a child. And it made me want to understand why I didn't feel connected to her. I really wanted to find her. And writing the book, she slowly started to come back. My partner, when he read the book, said that when he began the book, it was very hard for him to read because I seemed pretty depressed to him. And as he moved through the book, I got lighter and lighter and lighter. And I think that's the experience I had writing it.
Well, you know what's wonderful about interviewing a writer like you? There's so much material that I don't have to write the introduction and I do have to quote something that I really enjoyed at the very, very beginning. One of your self-descriptions was, "I am competent, mouthy, spirited." And, I mean, I couldn't think of any better way to describe you now, but you had to go on that journey to recapture and reclaim those aspects of yourself.
Yes, and I'm sure to many friends over the years, some of that has been very irritating as well as endearing.
Takes one to know one. I tend to irritate people in similar ways, so that works for us. Nancy Alvarez has a website. Could you tell the listening audience your website in case anybody wants to take any of these writing workshops?
Well, it's http://www.nancyalvarez, A-L-V as in Victor, A-R-E-Z, writes, writes.com.
And it's www.nancyalvarez. What are some of the other themes that come up for you that you feel come up for many women as well, other women as well?
Well, obviously, relationship is very important to almost every woman I know, and feelings of failure. And I think that my parents certainly had no idea what would make a relationship work. I think my mother was probably fairly unhappy through much of her marriage to my father. She was very spirited. My father was fearful and held back, and he kept trying to hold her back, although I think he was attracted to her initially because she was spirited, etc., which I think is a theme that I've seen in other women's lives, that what we're attracted to is also what frightens us. it's taken me a long time, both writing the book and leading these workshops, to not feel shame or that I have failed because I've been divorced twice. One of the women who took the workshop here in town, who had a 50-year marriage, talked to me about it, and she said that she made lots of compromises over those 50 years, and some of them were very big ones, where she gave up either parts of herself or things that were very important to her. And who's to say which is a better choice? That staying married gave her many wonderful things, and she also lost parts of herself, and getting divorced saved me in both instances in certain ways, and gave me much sadness that I hadn't been able to make them work. So who's to say which is a better choice and which is kinder to self, to stay with it or to get divorced? That was very freeing for me.
Well, and of course it's different in everybody's situation, but some of these themes, whether single or in relationship, are themes that women in this culture carry: shame, fear of failure, and also fear of success. I find that that's a very big one. People in relationships, women in relationships, sometimes hold back because in this culture sometimes it's not good to be too powerful.
I think that's been a story of my life. I'm either too much or too little. And when, interestingly enough, I think I had more success after my mother died. Much as we were close, she lived through me because she had given up so much to marry. And I think on some level I felt if I became too successful, it would be painful for her because it would put in her face all that she had given up and lost. So I think I held back.
You're listening to 91.9 KPTZ Community Radio, Port Townsend. This is Marcia Pearlstein of Treasures and Pleasures interviewing Nancy Alvarez. So, Nancy, let's jump in a whole different direction. What's the contrast like, and what was the transition like coming from L.A. to Port Townsend?
Boy, was I ready. I was so sick of L.A. As a matter of fact, when I go back to L.A. or even New York, I'm grateful that I don't live there. Much as the city has a lot to offer, it's too noisy for me, it's too chaotic, too busy. Here, I feel like I have time to think, to feel, to be. Plus, I'm beginning to think, although it's surprising for me because it wasn't important to me when I was younger, being close to nature matters a lot to me. I feel very connected when I take walks to the birds that I see and the foliage around me, and it's alive and it's beautiful. And so that wasn't too hard. It was much harder for my husband, who we got divorced and he left, and he moved back to New York City, actually.
When did you leave New York for L.A.?
Why do I remember? Early 70s.
Uh-huh. And what prompted that move?
My first husband was a theater director and wanted to get into movies, so we moved for him.
So you're really into all forms of the arts, in a sense, in terms of enjoyment and pleasure and things that feed your writing.
Yes, and some of my closest friends for years have been artists of one kind or another.
What else feeds your writing?
Reading. Uh-huh. I love to read. I used to come home from school, throw my school books under the bed, and read Tolstoy when I was in high school. So I absolutely love to read, and I'll read almost anything. That feeds me. My relationship with Winona, the significant man in my life, feeds me. My friendships with women feed me, which is probably why I enjoy doing the workshops. I think women connect on a very deep level pretty quickly and share unbelievable information about themselves with each other, and that's very healing. So that feeds me. Going to movies. Even though I worked in Hollywood and really hated Hollywood, I still love movies, love going to them. So all those things, music, going to museums.
What do you think of our film festival?
I love our film festival, and I adored Peter Simpson. So it's been very important in my life, and I think he and Linda Yakush have absolutely wonderful taste in movies.
Well, and the current crew as well. And it's quite a unique experience with the bales of hay and all the different outdoor movies.
Yeah, it is. It's great. We saw a little bit of National Velvet, and I just finished the biography of Burton and Taylor, so it was very fun for me to see her as a child. I didn't remember what she looked like as a child, and so it was very enjoyable.
Well, this has nothing to do with anything, but what part of New York are you from?
Well, I'm actually from New Jersey. I lived in the suburbs, and one of my fondest memories is when I talked my parents into letting me go to acting school in New York. And my first apartment, I moved in at 18. And my parents made me live at the 92nd Street Y because they were afraid of what I might get into if I lived in an apartment, which just makes me laugh when I think about it. And they used to find condoms on the floors between the men's floor and the women's floor, which I never told them, nor would I have chosen to do that on a staircase. That just seems really uncomfortable to me. And my first apartment was on 98th Street in Manhattan. And I was a ticket taker at the Thalia Movie Theater.
Oh, the Thalia, for those listeners that aren't from New York, it is one of the first place that had really major, major stream of art films. We used to call them art films in those days.
Yep.
It was a wonderful theater.
That and The New Yorker.
So what would you say to young people wanting to get into this field of either writing or videography?
Well, that's the first thing that came up, and it's going to sound kind of odd, I think, is to think about how you're going to earn money. Because any of these fields, any of the arts, it's really hard to earn a living at it. So, you know, I actually taught a class about that at USC in the Masters of Professional Writing program because I thought it was so important. And students said, my God, no one ever talks about that. That, you know, you have several choices. You can do a job that doesn't relate at all to any of the arts and think that's 8 hours I give during the day, and then I come home and I have the energy to work on what matters to me. Or you can choose a job like be a social worker that's going to give you stories that you can tell. But it really depends on your person and what works for you. Maybe living those stories with people will be exhausting, and so then you don't have energy or time. So I think you have to think about both things, and you have to keep at it. And study it, because we don't know how to do it real well when we begin, and we get better by doing it. So you have to keep at it.
Well, and you made a very important point in our off-air time that I think is true. The technology has improved so much that anybody can hold a video camera and think they're a filmmaker. Then to have your level of competence match the technology takes time and study and growth.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone said to me the other day that it makes them think about abstract painters today, that abstract painters during Picasso's era, they knew how to draw figures. I mean, they could do regular paintings and were wonderful at it, and it was an expression of the abstractness was an expression of their art and growth. And more young people today think, oh, I'll just paint abstractly because then I don't have to learn. Well, I think you have to learn it all and be able to do it with competence before you expand and change the form.
That's so interesting, because this same thing is true in therapy. I train, I call them virgin therapists, people just going into the field. They see what I do now, but what they don't get is, first I had to study psychoanalysis inside out. I had to know what I was going to keep and what I was going to throw away in forming a new, more modern way of approaching people.
Yeah, correct.
So you need the basics in order to know what you're veering from and to know why in any field.
In any field, I think that's true.
So Nancy Alvarez, what are some of your dreams for yourself currently?
To have an audience for my work, not only the memoir, but also as I keep writing fiction, the more and more people who read Little Nancy, the more they will be interested in what else I have to offer. The book publishing business is in the toilet, so it's very hard to get either an agent or published in this day and age, even if you have been, and I am a published writer. It's impossible. I want an audience. I can't stop writing because it feeds me, but I want other people to read what I write.
Now, what are some of the other things you've written? Novels, I mean.
I wrote a novel called Lady Cat, which was about a lady cat burglar who lived near Columbia. I wrote for the Waltons, and I wrote TV movies. And I've written a novel called The Girls and Me about a mother who gets a phone call in the very beginning of the book that her daughter, who was in Nicaragua, is has been arrested, and she and the younger daughter go down to get her out of jail, and they realize very early on that it's if they get her out of jail, and they have to come to terms with their relationship with her, with why she got put in jail, and the girl in jail has to fix or heal her relationship with her sister. It was a very painful book to write, but also wonderful because I have two daughters, and I really relish the relationship I have with them. So I do write about personal things, but I make them fictional.
Well, that gives you your starting off point, and then it allows you to play.
Yes.
Where locally can Little Nancy, The Journey Home, be found?
The imprint has one copy, but you can go online, and it's being sold at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. I can't remember what.
No other bookstores?
No other bookstores, and it's on print on demand. So you can either get it for the Kindle or the Nook, or they'll print you a copy and send it to you.
Local bookstores, hear this. If you're out there, listeners, we need to be carrying our local people's books. We need Little Nancy to be stocked in our poor towns and bookstores.
And I have books.
And does she have books? If you want books, just talk to Nancy. So, finally, is there anything I've left out that you want to be sure the listeners know about how you see the work you do, how you see the state of the arts, the state of writing?
The work I do, I think, is with women, even in my novel work, to help women look at their lives and open doors as opposed to closing them. That just seems so essential to me and tough to do. We're tempted to close doors all the time because life is painful.
Well, thank you, Nancy Alvarez. You are indeed a treasure and pleasure. And I want to give special thanks to Chris Shapiro, our sound engineer and editor, and Larry Stein, our program director and executive producer. Thank you, Nancy. It has been, as I said two sentences ago, but truly a treasure, and you are truly a pleasure to interview.
Thank you very much. You were a pleasure as an interviewer, too.